Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
I'm Ben Kinslow.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
Israel's general elections last month saw the retention of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for a fifth term as the nation's leader. Though it's apparent that the people of Israel have voted to keep the nation on its current course, the multiple issues surrounding the nation of Israel have also remained as well.
Well, that's true, Earl. And while Israel continues as a world leader in many fields of innovation and high-tech advancement, it also remains afflicted with the circumstances of the BDS movement, increasing global anti-Semitism, and of course, awaiting the proposal of the U.S. peace plan in dealing with the Arab-Palestinian situation.
To find out some of the recent opinions on the issue of Judea and Samaria, Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, and Israel's possible future scenario with the Arab-Palestinian population, Kevin Howard recently spoke with Shlomo Gordon, the youngest candidate ever to run for the Israeli Knesset. And we'll bring you that up-close interview in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel.
Thanks, Earl. Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danon, defended Israel's right to the land of Israel, including Judea and Samaria, when he addressed the United Nations Security Council on Monday afternoon. Jewish rights to the land of Israel depend on four pillars, Danon said. This includes the Bible, the history, the legality, and the pursuit of international peace and security. God gave the land to the people of Israel in Genesis when he made a covenant with Abraham, Danon said when he read from that passage. This is our deed to the land, he said. From the book of Genesis to the Jewish exodus from Egypt to receiving the Torah on Mount Sinai, to the gates of Canaan and the realization of God's covenant in the Holy Land of Israel, the Bible paints a consistent picture. The entire history of our people and our connection to the Land of Israel begins right here, Danon said. Now, before we return to Earl and Ben, here's today's This Page in History.
On April 27, 2002, Ruth Handler passed away at the age of 85, having provided the world with the iconic Barbie doll and related product line. Handler was born Ruth Mariana Mosko and the youngest of 10 children in a Polish-Jewish immigrant family that settled in Denver. In 1945, Handler's husband and partner started what would become the Mattel Toy Company. During the 1950s, Handler invented the Barbie doll, which took its name from her daughter, Barbara. She produced a three-dimensional plastic paper doll with an adult body and a wardrobe of fabric clothing because she noticed that adolescent girls were pretending for their adult lives and not their current young lives. Barbie was later joined by the Ken doll, named for the Handler's son, Kenneth. Unbeknownst to many, however, Handler was diagnosed with breast cancer and had a modified radical mastectomy. Because of difficulties in finding a good breast prosthesis, she decided to make her own. Handler went on to found a company which manufactured a more realistic version of a woman's breast, which she personally fitted for the First Lady, Betty Ford. There is a Barbie in the Smithsonian Institute.
Welcome back, everybody. As Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu enters his fifth term leading the nation of Israel, there are still many issues weighing on this tiny nation. Kevin Howard recently spoke with Shlomo Gordon in Jerusalem to find out some of the latest concerns.
Thank you, Earl. We are in studio today with Mr. Shlomo Gordon. He is a previous candidate for Knesset in the Zehut Party. Shlomo, thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you.
Shlomo, can you please give us a brief explanation about your history and your path to Israel?
I grew up in a secular Jewish family in Aurora, Illinois. I always was drawn to Judaism. I always liked going to the synagogue. I was always drawn to the Old Testament, the Tanakh, the Bible, the prophets, the Hebrew scriptures. I was drawn to the prayers. When I was 12, I started keeping kosher in the level that I was able to keep. And when I was 13, after my bar mitzvah, I came to Israel for the first time. I fell in love. I had an inexplicable connection. And I wanted to run away from the group and I wanted to stay. But I realized that that wouldn't go over too well with my parents. So I went back to America and I said, I'll go back to America for 5 years. I'll finish high school and then I'll make Aliyah. I'll come to Israel. So I went back and continued my studies and my both in school and my own personal religious studies. And when I was 18, I made Aliyah. I came to Israel. I became an Israeli citizen. And I understood that that meant that at some point I would need to go to the military. And I was happy to do that. I realized that overall, if you're a combat soldier in the IDF, what you deal with is security of the Jewish people who live here in the land of Israel. If you look in the Torah, if you look in the Bible, you find that from the age of 20 until the age of 50 is what's called Yotzei Tzava, those who go out in the army. It was something that it seemed to me a very authentic Jewish connection to the land of Israel and having our own sovereignty here. It's really an amazing thing to have our own sovereignty. It's a large part of what Judaism is about, having borders, having a land. It's territory for God's word to be lived by. There has to be a place that's designated for the people of Israel to live according to the Torah. And so now that we're in our own land, we're starting to see the fruits of that. It only if it's done in holiness, and if we start to think that the land of Israel is just a big piece of real estate and that it's not holy and that we can make deals with every country imaginable and we can give up parts of it and we can make all sorts of deals in Area A and Area B and Area C, then we're not going to be able to stay here because we've lost our righteousness. We've lost what allows us to be connected to this land.
Now, you mentioned Areas A, B, and C, and you've learned the lay of the land specifically in Judea and Samaria. Share more about this part of the nation and what it means to the integrity of Israel.
Judea, we're called Jews. Why are we called Jews? The English speakers decided that we're called Jews in English. But what are we called if you look in different languages? If you look at Arabic, Yahud, you hear the D. You look at Spanish, Judio, you hear the D. Look at Hebrew, of course, Yehudi. You hear the letter D. Jew isn't... It's not a derogatory word, it's not a negative word, but people need to understand when they say Jew, it's a shortened version of Judean. That's the first thing people need to understand. Where is a Irishman from? Ireland. Where is a German from? Germany. So where is a Judean from? Judea. Very simple. So how bizarre is it that we call Judean Samaria, because it was under a 19-year illegal military occupation by Jordan, because the Jordanians had an illegal military occupation of Judea and Samaria, and they called it the West Bank. Why? Because they're on the east bank of the Jordan River. And so they're calling this part of the land of Israel, they're calling it the West Bank of the Jordan River. So that's why they're calling it the West Bank from their point of view. So why in the world would I, when I know that their country, there's no historical Jordanian people, there's Nabataeans, there's this, there's that, but there's no ancient country of Jordan. The name of their country is the East Bank, essentially. Transjordan means the East Bank of the Jordan River. So they're living in the East Bank, and I know what the name of these portions of land is. It's Judea and Samaria. Why would I take on their completely false worldview where they have a country that has some sort of ancient history or something, and that my country that actually does have one of the most ancient histories in this land, where if you dig up anywhere in the village that I'm moving to, Bat Ayin in Judea, that we found writing what the ancient name was. The ancient name was Chachlili, a Hebrew name. We found there's a mikveh, a ritual immersion purification bath that only exists in Jewish places, Israelite places. You have that at the entrance to the village from thousands of years ago. So it's bizarre that people come and say that Judeans have no connection to Judea. It's the most bizarre thing. And so if we agree with this huge lie, it couldn't possibly... It's really twilight zone. It's darkness is light, light is darkness, truth is falsehood, falsehood is truth. It's completely backwards to say that Judeans don't have a connection to Judea. Completely bizarre thing. And there's a big... All the forces of evil are focusing on this point because they understand that the authentic connection of the Judean people to Judea, to the land of Israel as a whole, but particularly to the heart of the homeland, is it's part of the redemption. It's very simple. With this division of the land of Israel into areas A, B, and C, the Israeli government has been wanting to do this thing where we're going to be just a normal country. We don't want to connect to the land of Israel too much. In 1948 and 1949, they could have conquered all of Jerusalem. They didn't. They kept West Jerusalem so that they could make the Knesset, and they could say, oh, look, we've got Jerusalem, and so we've got the land of Israel, we've got Jerusalem. But they didn't want all of the spirit. It was secular Zionists had a very big part in the founding of the state of... They're the ones who did it. There were people who were sitting on the side and praying, but the people who came and did it on the ground were overwhelmingly secular Zionists. And so they liked the folklore of Judaism, and they liked the idea of connecting to the land of Israel. There were always these undertones of wanting to run away from Judaism, running away from... It's a very paradoxical thing. On one hand, connecting the land of Israel. On the other hand, they wanted to get away from what they perceived as exile Judaism. But how do you throw away the bathwater without throwing away the baby? So I think in many cases they threw away the baby with the bathwater. And this is ultimately led to a lot of problems, because there was always this will to not connect to Judea. Judea also includes the Temple Mount. So in our defensive war against the Jordanians, we conquered all of Judea and Samaria. So you couldn't possibly have a more justifiable war than the Judeans conquering Judea after being attacked, after begging not to be attacked, after begging the other side to continue to hold on to Judea. We were God forced. It's a God thing. It's a miraculous thing. It was Judea and Samaria were forced upon us, despite our own will. And because the Jewish people still didn't want, because the Israeli people that wanted to be just Israeli, just wanted to be just secular, didn't want this, this eventually led to the Oslo Accords. And the Oslo Accords were a total disaster. The Oslo Accords were born in sin. They've only brought evil. They were supposed to... The Oslo Accords was the idea of two states for two peoples, the invention that there's some sort of unique Palestinian people that is somehow different than the Syrian people or the Lebanese people, or if we go with the pan-Arab ideology, then all of the Arab countries, or if we go with the pan-Islamic ideology, then whatever, then all of the Muslims, whatever ideology you pick, the only way that you could possibly argue that Palestinians are their own people, and there's a grain of truth in this, is if some of them are Jews or other Israelite groups or mixed Israelite groups that converted to Christianity or Islam. If you're not saying that, then there is no unique Palestinian people. It's no different than Syrians or the people who live in Jordan, the people who live in Lebanon. It's no different. So why do we need to make a new state?
As we pray for the nation of Israel and her people, let's also remember to be thankful that God remains true to his promise of blessing the world through the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But right now, we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a special outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a tangible difference in the lives of so many people in Israel today.
A few years ago, Lisa's brother, Vlad, moved to Israel. He had cancer, and the doctors gave him only 2 months to live. But with the help of food, good medicine, and prayer, Vlad survived in Israel for another 2 years. However, while taking care of her brother, Lisa could not go to work. She received a small amount of support from the state, and it was not enough. That is when Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem stepped up to help. CFI not only gave food vouchers, clothes, and other needed items, but we visited Lisa's home many times and helped her family members get to the doctor. This was God's support to have Christian friends during their time of trouble. Hi, my name is Karen Toon, and I am the coordinator for CFI Jerusalem's project Open Gates. Today there are many Lisas in Israel who often arrive here with little more than the clothes on their back. Yet, for 3 decades, CFI has been able to help more than 250,000 new Jewish immigrants settle in their biblical homeland. And like Lisa, these new Israelis are very thankful to CFI for all the help they have received over the years. Lisa recently shared with me, "I know many dear people who have been volunteering in CFI. Some have also become friends. The support that I get from you is very important because I am physically weak and very sick. It helps me survive."
Christian Friends of Israel's project, Open Gates. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Shlomo Gordon as they talk about the latest issues surrounding the nation of Israel.
So what suggestions do you have to help facilitate more stability or solutions for Judea and Samaria?
First, we have to understand the problem. Part of the Oslo Accords was establishing this idea that there's this Palestinian people and that they need to have their own independent state. Now you have a generation that they believe that there's such a thing as a Palestinian nationality. So it's more of an issue to deal with these lies. But it's important to understand that these are falsehoods, and so that the entire basis of the Oslo Accords of creating an independent Palestinian state, it's a false basis. It's not like how there are some people who say socialism is a good idea, but it doesn't work. No, it wasn't a good idea, and that's why it didn't work. Same thing with the Oslo process. It was a Palestinian state. Was a bad idea, based in lies, based in the darkest forces that exist, and that's why it fails, because it's based in falsehood. In the late 80s, early 90s, the PLO had been defeated. They were in exile in Tunisia. Yasser Arafat was in Tunisia. He was in exile in Tunisia. He could have stayed there and lived as long as God wants him to live for and die in old age, and he wouldn't have been able to shoot rockets at us from Tunisia. The Israeli government was taken over by the extreme left that was allergic to Judea, that was allergic to this authentic connection to the land of Israel, to the heartland of the land of Israel. So the extreme left went and made a deal with the PLO, which again, the PLO was founded in 1964. It was before Israel was even sovereign in Judea and Samaria and Gaza. When they called themselves the PLO in 1964, the meaning of Palestinian Liberation Organization was there would be no Jewish sovereignty at the very least between the Jordan and the sea, meaning Israel has no right to exist. That's the meaning of the PLO. The extreme Israeli left went and made a deal with Yasser Arafat, and the extreme left managed to get its ideas into today. You talk to people that call themselves right wing, and they have accepted the ideas that originally came from the extreme left.
Shlomo, can you comment on the BDS pressure that prompted Airbnb to delist Jewish-owned properties in Judea and Samaria?
You know, I've spoken to a lot of BDS people, actually. I always try to have a debate. I've spoken to several people. I said, let's do a recorded debate. And then they always back off. I even spoke to someone from Syria that wasn't willing to debate me, because if people in Syria would see, then they wouldn't like it very much that there was a Syrian who was willing to have dialogue with an Israeli. It's mental illness. It's mental illness. Their worldview is mental illness. I've tried hours and hours and hours to understand where they're coming from. I understand the psychology. I understand everything. When I come and I give my solution, which is a solution that is rooted in reality, that it brings back the honor and the liberty of the Arabs living in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza, it solves the problem. It gets rid of Hamas as part of the problem. The PLO is part of the problem. There's lots of Arabs that will admit that. But here I'm coming and saying that here's the solution, and people will be able to live in honor. So when I spoke to the Syrian, for example, it was so close. Almost everything that I said, there was nothing to be said against it. But then I said, so let's do it. Let's agree that this is what needs to be done. No, I can't accept the existence of Israel. But you have to be connected to reality. How is it possible that there are still, some of them are Israeli citizens, some of them are in area A, B, C. How can there still be millions left if we ethnically cleansed Palestine of Palestinians? How are there millions still here? So it's mental illness. You can't talk to these people. And the way to solve is situations like that about BDS pressuring Airbnb, the way to solve it is what we're suggesting in the Zuhut Party, a one-state solution, full Israeli sovereignty. And then the BDS will have to rear its ugly head. And they'll have to say, no, we want a full boycott of all of Israel. We completely reject Israeli sovereignty anywhere. Because once we have the same status in Judea and Samaria as we have, right now Judea and Samaria, it's seen as a weak spot. It's seen as a spot that we can be attacked at. So that's why they're attacking that. And so you can say, oh, I'm not against the existence of Israel. I'm just against the illegal occupation of the West Bank, right? And the persecution of the Palestinians. If you answer that question mark with an exclamation point, and you say, not only is this ours, it's where we're from, it's the heart of our land, there's no question about it, we have full Israeli sovereignty here, despite whatever people in the world think, and despite all the pressures that we'll get for it, then everything in Israel is on the same level, and they won't be able to use this weak point anymore, this dragon's belly. They'll have to attack all of Israel. They'll have to say, we're boycotting the entire state of Israel. They'll have to say what they really believe. What they really believe is that the state of Israel has no right to exist. That's what they really believe. If you know how to listen in Arabic, if you know to read what they're really saying, if you know how to have dialogue with them, what it comes down to is that they're not willing to see the state of Israel existing. And so I want to do what needs to be done, and then it'll really bring them out into the light. They'll really be forced to show their true colors. They won't be able to play this game.
Shlomo, you've developed some expertise concerning the fate of the Christian Arab population in the area regarding increased vulnerability and persecution that they've received. How can you elaborate on that for us?
Whenever Jews and Christians talk about the land of Israel, the main place we talk about is Jerusalem. But Jerusalem is very charged. I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk about it, but everyone talks about Jerusalem. Jerusalem, it seems to be the Temple Mount specifically. It seems to be an overcharged issue. It seems to be something that it's completely religious, that there aren't individuals, there aren't people, there aren't faces, there aren't stories. So I think that an important thing that we should also talk about is Bethlehem, that it's the birthplace of King David. It's where Rachel is buried. It's a bizarre situation there today. There's a huge walls around Rachel's tomb. And then you've got Bethlehem on the side, and that's Palestinian Authority. But then you've got the big walls, and then it's under an unclear Israeli military thing. So it's an important place to Jews, and it's also an important place to Christian, because according to Christian tradition, Jesus was born in Bethlehem. So it was before the Oslo process, it was before area A, B, and C, it was just an Israeli military occupation. There was still the over 80% majority of Christians in Bethlehem, Beit Jala, Beit Sahur, those are in the same area. And then there's also Ramallah, it also had over 80% majority. All of these places had Christian mayors, Arabic-speaking Christian mayors. There were good relationships between the Israeli Jews and the Arab Christians in these areas. And it's funny that I'm telling this because I'm only 26 years old. I'm sure there's plenty of listeners who remember these days. Maybe they even came to the land of Israel and they were able to visit more freely these places without having to go through some sort of checkpoint or something. When Bethlehem Road, when I got a lot of this information, I got a lot of it from interviewing. And you can find on my YouTube, you can look up Shlomo Gordon, Michael Maimon, M-A-I-M-O-N, the real story of Bethlehem's Christian, something like that.
Mr. Shlomo Gordon, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for that interesting and informative interview concerning the latest possibilities of moving things forward in the only Middle East democracy, the nation of Israel. Well, our time's almost up for this week, and coming up, we'll hear from David Nkrutman with this week's Bible on the Go. But first, another visit to the CFIJ News Desk and David Milburn.
Thanks, Ben. A group of 11 pro-Israel German Christians left on a boat for Israel on Monday, bringing with them a 5 feet, 265 pound gold-coated menorah. The life-size replica of the temple lamp, the menorah, is traveling from Germany via Rome to the port of Haifa. It will arrive on May 5th and be presented to the public on May 9th at a special ceremony in Jerusalem. The group of independent Germans, which call themselves simply the Menorah Project, said they have been working on the piece for a year and a half. They raised money in private donations to fund the initiative. The seven-branch menorah is a symbol of the State of Israel, said Luca Elias Herzl, who initiated the project. For us, it is a symbol that speaks louder and more meaningful than all words. He said the menorah, modeled after the menorah at the Titus Gate in Rome, is being given to the Jewish people with a broad heart and in solidarity and as a gift on the 71st Israeli Independence Day. On its website, the Menorah Project explains its vision. As the Jewish people need to publicly deal with injustice and robbery, we want to publicly bring back the menorah from Rome to Jerusalem. Now, before we return to Earl and Ben, here's David Nekrupman with this week's Bible on the Go.
Recently, I had to interview someone for a position within my organization. Armed with the person's resume and a list of questions to see if I had the right person for the job, a thought popped into my head. Hey, did Abraham ever submit a resume to God? In fact, he didn't. There actually is nothing to indicate prior to the Genesis 12 episode for God's selection of Abraham. Oh, sure, we know about Abraham's lineage, marriage, and his wife's inability to conceive. However, there is no character trait that stands out as the reason for him to be the covenant carrier. In most English renditions of Genesis 12:1, the translation of the verse is, "The Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you." However, these translations leave out a key word from the Hebrew, lecha, for you. The translation should be, God said to Abram, go for yourself. This teaches us a great lesson that God was not ordering Abraham to leave it all behind like a sergeant speaking to a private, but giving him a choice to gain greater spiritual gifts. In order for Abraham to continue his outreach work for God beyond the comforts of his home, it would require shedding all the influences of his birthplace and eradicating the pagan influences of his own home. God's challenge to Abraham is a challenge to every one of us. It's not just going physically from one place to another, but about making a spiritual movement within oneself. Without a destination, Abraham does not take a leap of faith, but a leap of action to do something without understanding why. May we be inspired by Abraham's leap of action to tap into the incredible growth he experienced as well as the blessings he received. This is David Nekrupman with Bible on the Go.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody, and thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station because it supports Israel.
And before we go, let me invite you to join us on this station again right here next week as we bring you all the latest from Israel and the Middle East.
So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.